You see all the stories about Cavs Frog? I didn't know about Cavs Frog 72 hours ago. Now it's everything I see on social media,
it
the news,
is
everything.
Instagram. You just flip through the stories.
Yes.
The Cavs Frog is on everyone's story.
Right after the 15th win in a row for the Cleveland Cavaliers, the team's newest victory mascot hopped out of the arena to dance with ecstatic fans.
The Mets had Grimace, and we've got the Frog.
The Cavs Frog, simply known as Froggy, first leaped out on social media last month when the Cavs jumped to a 4-0 start. Then came 5-0. At 14-0, Cavs players took notice.
It's funny, but it's just like, that's what this stuff is all about. That's what the city of Cleveland has our backs like that.
Now at 15-0.
What was it like when you were recognized by the Cavs players?
We grabbed an exclusive interview with Froggy. Through her spokesperson, yes, Froggy is a she, we asked what makes her so unfroggettable.
Everybody smiles when they see her. That's it. Like, people just, they associate her with the wins. They associate her with joy and good vibes.
Up next for the Cavs, the tough Boston Celtics. And while Froggy's not worried the Cavs will croak, it's been a riveting story for fans.
Oh, it's so exciting. Cleveland's got some excitement, don't they?
And a totally awesome season ahead.
Audio courtesy of WKYC.
That is an award-winning piece right there. Submit that piece immediately. You've got every single Frog pun you could possibly... Now, did she say riveting or riveting?
It was riveting.
And
riveting.
Totally awesome season.
Wait a minute. You leave Lena Lai alone.
I'm saying... this.
That's a nice lady.
This should absolutely be in one of those award ceremonies.
What did 19 do?
I'm saying they all are. Every single one of them has done the Frog story.
They sent Brad Hamilton to do an interview, and he talked to the Frog, and the Frog nodded and everything like that.
There you go.
The Frog is a woman in a green frog blow up uniform or a inflatable. Yes, an inflatable mascot that they're dancing around in, and apparently it's taken downtown by storm after every Cavs win.
The Instagram account is exploding, and the fact that the Frog actually has a spokesperson.
Yes. I saw another, they have a team. I saw another person talking on behalf of the Frog. A man in a backwards hat. I'm not kidding you. There's a whole team behind the Frog, so it's... To be 15-0 is not just 15-0. Well, there's going to be some excitement around it.
Does the Frog go on the road now?
I have no idea. I don't know if the Frog is downtown or if the Frog is going to Boston, en route to Boston right now.
And then what happens? What is the Frog? I know we don't want to think about this. What is the Frog's official role once there is a loss?
It's like the San Diego chicken. This could be our own thing. Like, so there's no chickens in San Diego. Mm-hmm. What's the matter? You look at me like that for? I'm serious.
Well, the San Diego chicken wasn't associated with just wins and losses.
I know, but that's...
I mean, they have Moondog and Sir Cece for San Diego chicken-type roles. But think about, like, the Angels had the rally monkey or whatever.
Yes, they did.
It's more in that vein.
And the rally monkey held on for I think, longer than the rest of America was ready for it to hang on.
What I am pointing out, though, is that it doesn't need to be...
Well, that's why they lost Shohei, because...
That was definitely credited for the loss.
Like, Sir Cece and Moondog and Whammer, to a lesser extent, like, those are associated with the Cavs. This is organic. So Cavs Frog, it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, they're 15-0, and it'd be great if they go 16-0. If they end up, like, winning and then losing against New Orleans tomorrow, and they're 16-1, I don't think Cavs Frog should just go away. I mean, if they make a historic finals run or something like that, I think you're going to want that Frog around, people.
Yeah, well, here
have some fun with the Frog.
Here's the other question I really want to get into, because we've seen power struggles before in front offices. What do the official mascots of the Cavs feel about Cavs Frogger? Because right now, the Victory Frog is getting all the attention, much more attention than the typical mascots associated with the Cavs.
You know, that's up to
Moondog. Is Whammer still around?
Sir Cece.
Oh, Whammer's still around. Whammer comes out, you know, for mascot night particularly. They have other instances. I mean, there is a inflatable Sir CC and an inflatable Moondog as well.
When they have the City Edition jerseys, because it kind of harkens back to that era with that color, I thought Whammer might have came out earlier over the weekend, but they didn't bring Whammer out. I was kind of disappointed. 720, Dan Shaughnessy going to join us on the show. Hey, real quick, if you're really that adverse to the draft, could Jameis make a nice enough bridge for you?
I said, Kenny, I was
you
out.
You don't even want to think about it.
I was out on
Jameis
Winston experience, and that's even acknowledging. He was awesome. I thought he was pretty awesome on Sunday. I know they didn't score a ton of points, and part of that was the kicker, which has got to now start to factor into their decision-making.
No plans on moving on from him.
No.
None.
Well, they extended him. You're not giving up. You're not giving up, especially when the games don't mean anything anymore. You're not going to give up on your kicker now, right?
Yeah, whatever, man. Continue. What were you saying?
Well, that doesn't make sense to you?
I mean, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so
they were bad before and they moved on from kickers, but whatever.
Yeah, but this one has a contract. This one they extended. So, yeah, you're going to give them every opportunity to try to make good and try to put this season behind them.
Everything Andrew Berry tries to put faith into recently is just it's totally betrayed him. Go ahead.
So, Jameis, to me, I just wonder. Look, the speeches are entertaining. The Browns social media, they post every single one of his pregame speeches. But when you lose, it starts to be a tune out, I think, for a lot of people. Like, yes, we enjoy hearing Jameis and we enjoy hearing the funny stories, but that goes out the window when it's a bunch of losses. And you almost feel like it becomes all about the attention on his speeches. All right, I don't know if we can do this.
I don't think he's doing it to try to get attention on himself, just to get attention on himself. Is that what you're thinking?
I know it comes off that way, though. It comes off that way after a while.
Well, I think it comes off
like,
that way.
Like, is he just talking to hear himself talk?
Well, I think they're trying to do anything to have good vibes around the football team, because if you didn't have him talking, I mean, what else are you going to put out there?
There's nothing else
that they can put out there.
I can just tell, though, like, he commands, because he is the starting quarterback now, and he's kind of become the de facto leader of the team, that you got all these guys around him. Is every single guy all in on everything he has to say?
I would say that Jerry Jeudy probably is now, since he's getting the ball more, and Elijah Moore and Cedric Tillman. I think those guys probably are. I think you're overvaluing that.
You think the defense that gave up in the fourth quarter, you think they're really getting revved up for his speeches?
How about they get their own motors going? Why do they need to? Why do they need to blame Jameis for their poor performance? So because Jameis tried to give a motivating pregame speech, that means Juan Thornhill decided to jog around.
So you don't get tired of hearing the Jameis kind of fishing for words?
But honestly, I haven't really watched it in a couple of weeks. I haven't really watched it at all.
I just think it can be exhausting, and especially now, it's going to be associated with a lot of losses. They're going to start losing a lot of games.
Well, they're not a good football team.
No.
And they're poorly coached, and things aren't going that well.
That's what I mean. Eventually, you just tune that stuff out. It doesn't mean anything. These pump-up speeches, it's like, hey, he pumped us up for that loss. He pumped us up for that loss. And then there was that loss. You know what I mean? Like, it starts to compound itself.
So because...
And I think that it's more than just a speech, right? We're talking about the speeches because that's what we're privy to. What is it like behind the scenes? Like, you see the roller coaster of Jameis. You see the facial expressions after every incompletion. It's like, dude, they're going to be incompletions. It's okay. We don't have to overreact to every single thing.
He threw for 395 and two touchdowns.
I know.
That's worse than that?
I think in an honest moment, I think some of the Browns would be like, this is exhausting playing with this dude.
I can't believe I'm hearing this from you. I don't know why that would be so exhausting to have a guy who actually puts the ball on the wide receivers for the first time all year.
No, I'm talking about bigger picture stuff. Like, whether he can... We've had 84 starts in the Jameis Winston career.
Yeah, it's such a shame. He wants to go out and try to win the football game. He doesn't want to stand around and wait to lose like everybody else.
I think you're misreading this. I think we know who he is as a starting quarterback. And then you add to the fact, like, is your quarterback room next year going into the season, Jameis Winston and... Deshaun Watson. I am out on that. I want to make it perfectly clear.
Well, I am
out
on that,
and I think a lot of Browns fans would be out on that.
I don't know if Deshaun Watson is actually coming back. And whatever form that might be, I have no idea. But whatever form, they didn't seem too terribly enthused about the idea of him coming back. That's the head coach and the general manager. Don't go after me. Now, I guess you can always play the trump card and say, well, we'll find out what the owner has to say about that because he's ultimately the one that makes the decision. Okay, but if you're telling me that 395 is a good enough, because I'm thinking about it like going, hey, I think they're going to draft a quarterback. And it's like, let's figure out the best quarterback that they're going to draft here in the first round. But if you are that averse to drafting a quarterback, I don't know. What other direction am I going to look into for quarterbacks other than him as far as a quote-unquote bridge? Yeah. Am I going to go back to the Deshaun Watson thing? No. That's a dark cloud that hangs over the franchise.
Yeah,
I don't care how much money's
up
there.
Trey Lance, Justin Fields.
Trey Lance? Yeah, I'd rather Deshaun Watson out there. I'd rather try to work it out with Deshaun Watson than Trey Lance.
I'm not against drafting a quarterback. There's still games to be played. There's still a combine. There are pro days. Like, there's still more of a story to be told about all these quarterbacks. And I know that, you know, just because you're hearing they're not as good as last year's quarterbacks and they're not as good as next year's quarterbacks, that
doesn't mean you can't find a right quarterback.
Means none of them are draftable. Like, I think if you're looking for perfect, you're never going to be happy. You're never going to be happy about drafting a quarterback because none of them are perfect.
I agree with you on that. But my whole thought is, if you really did not like this class, if you're going, we are not going to add... Like, if they end up with the number one overall pick, like, if they're 2-15, they might end up with number one overall. You got to consider this. And I know we got to go to break. Just consider this. Are you going to not draft Travis Hunter? Are you going to draft a quarterback instead of Travis Hunter? Because if the class ain't that great, that doesn't mean that there's going to be a lot of guys trying to trade up to go to number one with you.
Right.
And so if I go out and I draft Travis Hunter, or if I get the number one pick, I have to think about him and all of a sudden think about my future, my franchise with a bridge quarterback.
This is a crazy thing. I mean, they are going to have a top five pick, and it could be number one. It could be number two. Like, that is unbelievable, like, now to think about the fact that they'll have everybody at their disposal.
He's the best all-around college football player. He's proven. I know that he got banged up with an injury this year, but if you're playing 120 snaps, you're proving that you're durable. And so if I get the number one overall pick, I'm sorry, I have to think about best overall instead of just QBs. And if I have to think about best overall, then I'm like, all right, what are my other options? Trey Lance is not an option to me. Justin Fields, I don't know. Again, adding bad to bad doesn't make it any better. So do I go back to Jameis? Or are we just really going to overreact to pregame speeches? Cavs-Celtics tonight, the game of the century. Cavaliers coming to this one 15-0, looking to make it 16-0, hopefully on their way to eclipse the Golden State Warriors. And their all-time record of starting off the season 24-0. The Celtics 11-3, but defending world champions. And rightfully so. Got a hell of a basketball team over there. Tonight, a very big matchup. Neither team has played a tremendous schedule to start things off. I know Boston fans went after Cleveland fans. Cleveland fans went back and said, oh, wait a minute. Now we're still higher than you, even though we're both kind of near the bottom there. So let's figure out the truth here. And whether or not we get our respect tonight against the Boston Celtics. Dan Shaughnessy joins us from the Boston Globe. Dan, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, nice to be here. How are you guys doing?
We're doing okay. So what is the level of, what's the level of excitement for this game in Boston tonight?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't measure this too greatly. It's people are aware, and the Celtics haven't had that many interesting games, and they don't have that many interesting games. There's only four teams in the East playing 500 ball or better, and that's disappointing. I mean, obviously, Milwaukee and Philly have had horrible starts. Teams they always consider kind of competition. The Knicks came here for the opener and got beat by like 1,000, so they're not taken seriously still. So, yeah, I mean, they're looking for competition, and the playoffs last year didn't provide much. You guys made a nice showing in the conference semifinal and beat them thoroughly one time. That's all I look for is competition. So I think we got some tonight. That's the great news, is that you got an undefeated team coming in. So there's awareness of that, and I made a note of it over the weekend, and Gary Washburn's got a full-blown column in the Globe about it today. But the column's inside. It's not, out front. We still got, Gerard Mayo screwing up the game Sunday and Red Sox going after Soto, we think. Pedroia going to the Hall of Fame. Bruins getting smoked again last night by the Columbus Jackets. So, I mean, it's not a big event here. It is not. And it's also got that goofy statue of the NBA Cup thing going on. So you won't see the parquet floor. You'll see this goofy green floor and all this contrived stuff that the league likes now.
Well, I didn't know it was a cup game, Tone. That adds an entirely different spin.
Oh, yeah, Tuesdays and Fridays, right?
Oh, my goodness, you're right. I forgot it was a cup game. Go ahead.
Yeah, Dan, is that, by the way, is that bad?
That makes me like... That makes me like you even more, the fact that you're unaware of this stupid thing. Well, so you just went way up in my estimation.
Now, wait a minute. Now, hold on, Dan. Let me ask you this question, because now you're going to think a lot less of me here. You might hang up. We bandied about that if the Cavs were to win the in-season tournament or the NBA Cup, as it's now called, we hang the banner, but not just hang the banner. We put the banner in place of Nate Thurman's banner here at the arena in Cleveland. Let me add this caveat. I can hear you groaning already. Let me add this caveat. We had the late, great Nate Thurman on the show years ago, like right before he died, actually, and he was hoping that Golden State beats the Cavaliers, where his jersey is retired in both buildings. So it's not the best, warmest, fuzziest memory ever. Dan, your thoughts?
I love Nate Thurman. Anything Nate Thurman says is okay with me. So if he was, I would keep his face of honor at any venue that has chosen to do that. He was a wonderful player and underrated because he played in the time of Chamberlain and Russell. It's tough for him to get a lot of attention.
The average 5 points a game playing for the Cavs. Dan Shaughnessy joining us right now on the hotline. Is that bad for the NBA that we're sitting here not even knowing this was a cup night and this is year two and LeBron won it in year one to sort of validate the whole experience?
Yeah, anyone who wastes any amount of time talking about it or trying to figure out what the rules are or advancing in pool play, I mean, it's a complete waste. I'm sure it's directed at young people and soccer fans and trying to carve out a bigger global audience. It's not for us, and I'm okay with that. Knock yourself out. I'm not aware of anyone who's interested in it.
All right, so this is the defense of last year's world championship from the Boston Celtics. And along the way, they had this series with the Cavs where, on paper, all right, it was, what, a gentleman's sweep. You did see Evan Mobley kind of come alive at the end of the series, but kind of felt like the Celtics, when they wanted to put their foot on the gas, they were able to do that. Is there a chance that Cleveland, Boston, this could be a burgeoning rivalry between these two teams with as good as the Celtics are and with the up-and-coming young upstart Cavs?
I hope so. I mean, I'm looking for it in the East. I don't see it. I mean, I always had hope for Philadelphia, and I'm just tired of them now. You know, it's the same old stuff this year. It's even worse. And the Bucks are on the decline, as we know. So, you know, you got the Pacers maybe going in the right direction. You guys certainly go in the right direction. And I welcome that. I just want competition because I enjoyed it more when the Celtics were playing the Lakers in the finals, you know. And, you know, the good old days of the 80s when the NBA was better, that sort of thing. But I just like competition. The Celtics had a 16-3 run in the playoffs last year, and it was way too easy. And I don't know. It's still a championship. It's great. But I like those close games they used to have with the Sixers or the Bucks or the Pistons or whatever. And we didn't see much of that at all last spring.
Do you not like the product that the NBA is putting out there right now, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I like the playoffs, and you know, I like watching individual talent. And, you know, it's. I don't set my watch by it. It's just I wait for the playoffs, and there's an element of that for sure. And this Boston team, you know, I want to see them get pushed, and they're really good, and they have great rotation and good depth. And Brad Stevens done a great job, and Zill's done a great job, and you know, Brown and Tatum kind of came into themselves last year. Horford's still playing well. The guards are spectacular. You know, White and Holiday, they're great defenders. I mean, Pritchard's playing really well off the bench. Porzingis hasn't even played yet. That might give him some minor league ball running up and down to get back in shape. They're going to be very careful to bring him back so that he's ready for the playoffs, which is all they care about. But, yeah, I just like to see him get pushed a little bit more. And yeah, I mean, again, all the old-timers are not in favor of this game versus, you know, the rollerball of the 80s and 90s. With everybody jacking threes these days, so but that's evolution. That's the way the game's played, and I understand that, and I accept it.
Well, it's weird because I mean, we wanted parity so much for a long time. In my generation here, Dan, we wanted parity because, and even you know, we had LeBron, so it felt like LeBron was the only chance we had to look at it. And it's like, okay, well, if we were able to beat the Celtics, now all of a sudden we would have a look at it. Everybody's aiming for you, but if you're a Celtics fan, you look around the league. You are kind of going, okay, who do you take seriously? Maybe you take Cleveland seriously in the Eastern Conference. Okay, Oklahoma City, maybe you take them. Other than that, yeah. I don't know. There's not a whole lot of, hey, there's a big team over here. There's a big team over there, which it still seemed to be that way during the super team era. Now with the second apron and all the other things that they've done to get rid of that and add parity, it seems like it's almost watered down in a way.
No, I agree with that. I think that's a really good summary of what we're seeing. And again, not having the super teams. And I mean, the Warriors came in here. They only had one loss, and they overcame a 7-point deficit and beat the Celtics on their floor, last month. So that's a sign that there's still a little bit of breathing going on there. And as you mentioned the Thunder. I thought Denver last year would have been a way better matchup for the Celtics in the finals. Denver beat them twice during the regular season. No one else did that. And Murray got hurt, and they were beaten by Minnesota, who was beaten by Dallas, and there you have it. So all you can do is beat who's there in front of you. I understand that, but yeah, I do miss the old rivalries and loading up. And I'm hopeful that your guys can represent really well tonight and beat them, whatever. They need a little humbling around here. And for you guys to go 16-0, that'd be kind of cool. And I was surprised you're already past. The Celtics never did that. They went 14-0 with Russell's second team after they won the championship back in 57. But that's a great start, and not to be understated. I think it's really hard to do that in today's NBA. See, with the back-to-backs and load management and all the stuff, so you guys should be darn happy with that. And I'd be thrilled if they came in here and won a close one tonight. That's fine with me. Let's get this thing going.
His latest book, Wish It Lasted Forever, Life with the Larry Bird Celtics, it is available on Amazon. Dan Shaughnessy joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
You were talking about where the NBA is now, and yes, it seems like, older fans always tend to prefer when they were growing up watching the sport. The Celtics right now, this is just incredible. They are shooting 51 three-point attempts per game. I went back just because you're on the air, and I thought you would look back fondly at maybe this era. The 1985-86 Boston Celtics. You enjoyed watching them, correct?
I think it's the best team the NBA ever had.
Well, that's why I chose them. Do you know how many three-point attempts they had per game? Again, 51 this year under Joe Mazzulla as head coach. Do you know how many it was in that year?
I'd be surprised if it was double figures.
It was 4.8 per game.
I guess three.
Larry Bird averaged 2.4 three-point attempts per game. Did they not know math back then, Dan?
And they had guys who could do it. I mean, Ainge was a marksman. Jerry Seasting was. Scott Wedman, you guys remember him. He scored 10,000 points for the Cavaliers. So they had guys who could make that shot. Just nobody took it. I mean, we're never going to see McHale take one of those. I mean, forget that.
So what do you think the NBA, because they've been talking lately and the commissioner has admitted there has been a drop-off in ratings, certainly regular season games. That's why they attempted to do the cup. But do you think the three-point shooting, the lack of variance of the way the game is played, basically every team plays faster than and shoots more threes than the Warriors team in 2015, 2016. So where do you think the NBA needs to go from here? Is it something that needs fixing?
I don't know how you legislate it. I mean, this is clearly analytics and metrics, and we all understand the percentages. If you can make fewer threes, but you still score more points than if you're taking more twos, it's just math. And they've all figured that out, and everybody's going for it. But it's not aesthetically pleasing, as opposed to, the old back door, give and go, the white picket fence, all the old bastard stuff that that we like so much. So I understand that it's math, and it works. And these guys here in Boston, They're not embarrassed about it. And Mazzulla will look you right in the eye with those crazy eyes and tell you, no, this is what we do. So the only thing they want a layup or a three. That's it. Everything else it didn't evolve the way they were looking for. And that's just, if you watch the women's game today, it's more like the men's game from 30 years ago with, those kinds of, plays, pick and rolls, give and goes, all that stuff. And just ball movement and player motion. Instead of five guys standing around the perimeter, jacking three. So, but again, I don't bay at the moon about this. This is the reality. This is what you're going to see. But it's one of the reasons, there's less interest in watching regular season than playoffs when you get a lot more stakes in the line. And then you pack on load management to that and people paying big dough for games and not seeing star players. That's no fun. So, yeah, Adam Silver lives a charmed life. They don't really criticize him much. But I think it's a little bit of an issue. But young people still really like this product, and they're good on social media, and they work hard to be a global product, which they are. So good for them.
Dan, we thank you very much for the time. All the best to you and yours. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Enjoyed it. Keep Nate Thurmond out there, man. Keep, please.
Well, we'll consider it, Dan. Thank you very much for the time. Dan Shaughnessy, Boston Globe, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
The point there about, you know, a bunch of guys just sitting around jacking threes, that's really not what the Cavs are doing. The Cavs ball movement has been incredible. I've seen some of the next-gen stuff and the way that the basketball wonks kind of break down what the Cavs are doing, and it's almost maniacal.
I think tonight's
Kenny Atkinson,
gonna be,
how he has these guys playing.
I think tonight, even good or bad, you're going to be annoyed by the Celtics. I mean, if you're throwing up that many threes, and considering how the Cavs play, I think that a lot of people are going to be annoyed. Like, really, this many threes in a basketball game, you're going to be taking this. Like, I'm sorry.
It's almost 13 a quarter.
When you watch the Cavs.
One a minute, like, is what they're doing.
It's not like the Cavs are trying to play old back them down to the rim basketball or old bastard stuff the way that Dan Shaughnessy just said. But, again, there's ebb, there's flow, there is this artistry to the pass that what they try to do with the Cavaliers. I think with the Celtics, I think a lot of people are going to go, not what I anticipated seeing.
So we're taking 37 a game. And we are shooting as the most efficient of any team in NBA history right now. The Celtics, this is how they can just bludgeon you. If they are on, it's almost impossible to see a scenario where if they have one of their on three-point shooting nights, and that's why, you know, you want Wade, you want Okoro to be able to come out. Even LeVert has played well defensively this year. You want those guys to at least contest and to get into the chest of some of these shooters, because if they are open, once that stuff starts hitting, especially at home, you know, we have the Cavalanche thing going on.
Yeah.
What they have in Boston when their three-point shot is on is like something impossible to defend.
Sometimes you just need a fix.
FML, my life.
My life.
FML, fix my life.
Kenny, what do we do?
Fixing lives.
My life.
All right, Kenny, it's your time of the year.
Is it?
Yeah, nobody gets into the holidays like the Carmens. And I know because I've received the Carmen Christmas card in the past.
Good.
Must be nice.
Always a thing of beauty.
I send it to your ex-wife's house by accident.
Yeah, Kenny has done
constantly.
This.
She's moved three times.
Yeah, well.
And he keeps asking her, what's your next address?
They'll keep finding her.
Not what's your current, what's your next one? So that's always a big endeavor. Like some people, they do all out. I've seen people do video shoots now for their Christmas cards. So some people obviously get all into this and spend a ton of money on this. Kenny, how many addresses right now are in the Rolodex to send out those Christmas cards?
I'm not sure Liz has ordered 200. Liz has ordered 200 Christmas cards.
Is that up from last season?
Yeah, she wants to make sure because she had to order more last year.
And is that because you have new contacts?
There will be some new names that are added to the list, but there are not. It's not like I would say there's about four that are added from last year to this year.
So is this like when you're sending thank you letters to Don Staley, and are you adding these names?
No. I'm not sending Don Staley a Christmas card. I sent Don Staley a thank you note for coming on the show. I've sent lots of people thank you cards.
Well, are you adding the names for her to do?
No, I do them. Liz don't do them. I do them. Liz orders them. They come here, and then she goes, here you go.
Is that because of your handwriting?
Yes, for the most part. Well, I just fill them out on the... I put them in the envelope, and then I write them out, and away we go.
Then I have no further questions.
There you go.
This just seems like so much work.
It's not. I don't know how expensive it is. I'm sure it's not the cheapest thing I've ever done.
Sending black and white.
What am I getting? What am I getting for my buck? Right. I get a picture of the Carmens.
Yeah.
And then inside, when I open it, I get.
That's it. Well, I think it's just like a card. I don't think you open up the card.
Okay. So I think it's just. I get.
Probably some sort of Bible verse. That's up to Liz.
Ken writes from the Carmens.
No, it just says from the Carmens. I don't have to write anything on the card.
You can just send me a link to that picture, man.
No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that.
Instagram.
No, because the whole thing of it, it's supposed to be posted to a door or a wall or something like that when you get the Christmas card. That's the whole point of it. That's what you're supposed to do.
We'll just print it out. I have a digital photo frame. I'll just put it in there.
No. I know you, and you're not going to print it out. I want a physical card sent.
I know you, and you're going to send it to a woman that I divorced
Well, that's your fault. I didn't send it to Indonesia. I sent it to Parma, Ohio.
I don't have any wives there.
Okay, sure. Yeah. And I'm not a fat white guy from Northeast Ohio.
So what pictures are you thinking of choosing? Are you narrowing it down?
I have no idea. Liz chooses it. I did tell Liz not to make it too religious this year.
Are you doing a specific photo shoot for this, or is it one of the photos you've already taken?
Are you guys dressed up like the Righteous Gemstones?
I mean, oh my gosh, that should be next year's Halloween costumes. Oh my God, that's a great idea. What'd you say there, Tom?
Did you take a specific photo for
We usually take pictures every other year. So this will be a collage, I think, of the last couple of years. This will be Sam's last Christmas card. Sam's going to be included in the Christmas card. Wow. That'll be it. And
even
then
he's dust. He's still on the card.
Ashes to ashes, dust to Christmas cards.
But she'll have the new doggy in there, right?
Oh, Ginny will be in there. Ginny Winnie will be in there.
And then what do you do for all the cards that you get? How do you display?
Put them on the door. You put them on the door to the basement.
So same way every year?
Yeah. Yep.
So I guess my last question is, you keep adding. You're up to 200. Is anybody going away?
If they die.
Yeah, but we know how that is with your Facebook messages. You can't necessarily keep track of everybody that dies.
Oh, I had an embarrassing one a while ago.
Well, they're all embarrassing.
One I found out.
You should not be proud of one more than
I found out one had been. I'm just going to admit it. I had been wishing this person happy birthday for 10 years. They had been passed for 11.
Whoopsie daisy!
That is by far the most egregious of the happy birthdays I have had miscues on.
Well, you'd figure somebody would have reached out.
Nobody did for a decade. Oh, wow. It was 10 years ago. I haven't heard from this person in a long time. And I looked and I went, I haven't heard from this person in over a decade. They have passed on. They are in the great beyond and they've been passed on for a while. They were dead before my son was born. You just try to be nice. That's all I'm trying to do.
That's all you're trying
I'm
to do.
I'm just trying to be a nice person. That's all I'm trying to do.
Owen, how much money do the Carmens spend on? I know you can't answer this, Ken. How much money do they spend?
I don't know.
On Christmas cards?
I'm gonna guess.
North of 300?
What's the card stock?
They doing?
We're doing a pretty good card stock.
Because these are going to be really nice.
We're doing a gloss.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying they're spending they're spending at least $8 a card.
No,
right?
No.
Well, don't forget postage.
No. Yes. Well, that's you can get ink. The cards, but you got to get the envelopes.
Yep. Well, no, are these cards?
Don't tell me the price. If you tell me the price, I'm not going
to
do it anymore.
Are you outsourcing this to a company that makes them for you and sends them back to you?
Yeah.
On the internet?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're paying.
No, we're not paying $8 a card.
$6 to $8 a
card.
No,
we're not paying $6 a card. I won't allow it. I won't allow it. You better not let my wife tell me.
Right, you don't want to find out.
Don't tell me. I don't want to know because then I'm not going to send out Christmas cards anymore.
The only thing ruined this Christmas,
people enjoy my Christmas cards that I send them.
People complain about the price of milk. What are the price of these Christmas cards?
Well, you saw what's going on in California. They're damn well going to be concerned about the price of milk.
I voted because I was told that Christmas card prices would be coming down.
I mean, the economy in the Carmen household seems just fine.
Why are you counting my money? I don't even know how much money I have.
Well, I'm going to get one of the cards.
I don't know what I make.
Congratulations on all your success.
I mean, he's sending cards to dead people. He's sending cards to the ex-wives.
I never sent a card to a dead person. Oh, and I mean to send the card to her ex-husband, and it ends up to her. That's how that goes. I'm sorry. Well, there's a lot of people that I'd like to send Christmas cards to. I have my old neighbors in Ridgeville.
Mm-hmm.
I have people in the borough. I have the people we've worked with, the fine folks at North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, a place you can count on, and so.
You said it's a collage this year?
Yeah, I think
so. Well, that's going to cost you more.
No, yeah, it's an upcharge.
Don't tell me. Don't tell me what it is or I'm not going to want to do it.
Nobody's picked the collage in years.
John Greco's on the Christmas card list. He's going to join us next. He is on the Christmas card list. I didn't mean for that to be a terrible tease. It just went out that way. He is on the Christmas card list. Would John rather not me spend my money on a Christmas card to send him and his family?